Hey, Scott, it's Juliana again. I forgot to say, the other night I went to see the Foo Fighters, and I was talking to the drummer, Taylor, and I was telling him that I need a new bass player, and he said, he was recommending this guy named Tommy, who used to be in Loud Lucy, and I was just wondering, what's up with Tommy, who's in Loud Lucy? Do you know that guy? You probably know him, because they were Chicago people, right? Okay. What's the scoop on Tommy? Bye.
This band played at the Metro. About 800 people were at the rock show. The jam session was awesome. It whooped the horse's ass. The Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters. The band played it on. The band got down like a magic kiss. The crowd roared like a lion. The jam session whipped the tiger's ass. The Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters.
Thank you. light shining. I'm a wall light, blinding bright, burning off all alone. It's times like these you learn to live again. It's times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time and time again. I'm a new day rising. I'm a brand new sky to hang the stars upon tonight. I'm a little divided. Do I stay or run away and leave it all behind?
Send in your skeletons, sing as their bones go marching in again. They need you buried deep, the secrets that you keep are ever ready. Are you ready? I'm finished making sense, done bleeding ignorance, the whole
pretender. What if I say I will never surrender?
In time or so I'm told, I'm just another soul for sale. Oh well, the page is out of print, we are not permanent, we're temporary, temporary, same old story.
Surrender. What if I say I'm not like the others? What if I say I'm not just another one of your place? You're the pretender. What if I say I will never surrender?
Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? I'm the voice inside your head you refuse to hear. I'm the face that you have to face, mirrored in your stare. I'm what's left, I'm what's right, I'm the enemy. I'm the hand that will take you down, bring you to your knees.
So who are you? So who are you? Yeah, who are you? Yeah, who are you? Keep you in the dark, you know they all pretend.
What if I say I'm not like the others? What if I say I'm not just another one of your place? You're the pretender. What if I say I will never surrender? What if I say I'm not like the others? What if I say I'm not just another one of your place? You're the pretender. What if I say I will never surrender?
From their Brothers in Farms album, that is Steven Seagal's here on the Viva La Mock radio program. Wrapping up what we call the Mock, a Foo Fighters Mock for you. Steven Seagal's with The Pretender. Before that, Glen Campbell from his Meet Glen Campbell album, doing Foo's Times Like These. Petra Haden along with Bill Frisell with their version of Floaty. Then I threw some Wesley Willis in there, because you know what? It's always fun to throw in some Wesley Willis with his song Foo Fighters. And then before that was a Julianna Hatfield song, her doing her version of Learn to Fly, which you're hearing in the background. But before that, between Wesley and the Julianna Hatfield, was a clip that I'm going to credit to Local H, because it came off of their... now I'm spacing out on the album I pulled it off of. Pack Up the Cats, that's the album. And it's called Answering Machine because it's just a bunch of clips of different answering machine, little legitimate answering machine messages that the band had received. And that one was from Julianna. And I believe that was actually from Julianna Hatfield. So that was in between Julianna and Wesley. And then I start off the entire set from the Sahara on Hot Lights. Sahara... People Things, the Sahara Hot Nights. I knew it's in there somewhere. Them doing Big Me. Pulled that one off the Sparks album, which was Sahara Hot Nights' fifth album. In case you were keeping track. Anyway, that was a Foo Fighters mock. If you ever have a suggestion for a mock, drop me an email at wrctrequest@gmail.com and let me know what you're interested in hearing. See if I can either pull something out of the archives or do a nice, fresh, new mock for you. We'll see what happens. Who knows what's going to happen on the Viva La Mock radio program? I certainly don't, and right now I'm driving the boat. Hey, speaking of driving boats, I'll be back with more music right after this quick little message for you.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh. My name is Paul. I'm the Mockster. It's a little show I do each and every week at this very time called the Viva La Mock Radio Show, and I appreciate it when you can tune in and just check out what's going on. You can always drop me an email at wrctrequest@gmail.com if you want to say hi or have a suggestion for a song. This one came out quite a few years back, but it is actually Beck taking on a Daniel Johnston tune. true love will find you in the end. It's the Viva La Mock radio program here on WRCT.
True love will find you in the end. You'll find out just who was your friend. Don't be sad, I know you will. Don't give up until true love will find you in the end. This is a promise with a catch. Only if you're looking will it find you. 'Cause true love is searching too. How can it recognize you unless you step out into the light? Don't be sad, I know you will. Don't give up until true love finds you in me. Just who was your friend. So don't be sad, I know you will. Don't give up until true love finds you in the end. True love will find you in the end.
True. politics, bodyguard at hardened bits, a blue-eyed honesty, indigo injury, a family tree is fair, bereavement wants a will, giving up on certainty, wilderness society, wearing the fame like a loaded gun, tied up with a rosary. Ooh, I'm glad I'm not a Kennedy. Imagine being a Kennedy.
Devastation, the right to breathe air as nature provided it, the right of future generations to a healthy existence.
Let us, if we can, step back from the shadows of war, seek out the way of peace.
Out of here, so now, la la la.
From the Joshua Tree album, U2, Running to Stand Still here on the Viva La Mach radio program. Before the U2, Shauna Lang from New Zealand. Doug wanted to hear that one. Went back to 1985 with Glad I'm Not a Kennedy. Also played something from James Iha. James Iha, the guitarist for Smashing Pumpkins. It was a song called Country Girl. Pulled that off of his Let It Come Down album. I think it was the first solo album he put out. I know he's got at least two, and I've always loved that album. And started off the entire set with some Beck. With True Love Will Find You in the End, a Daniel Johnston penned tune that for some reason I've been listening to a lot. But you know what I discovered? True Love Will Find You in the End if you listen to WRCT, because we love you. All of us. I mean, there's that one DJ who doesn't really dig you, but just don't listen to that person's show. Yeah, I know. I can't name names, but you know who I'm talking about. But you know what? You can fall in to the trap door. What am I talking about? You can listen to punk, folk, hardcore, and more with DJ Sideways on his show, Trap Door, each and every Tuesday night here on WRCT. 10 p.m. if you want to know when. See, there's great shows. You can go to WRCT.org and check out the entire schedule. Find out what shows are where. Look at playlists. In fact, look at my playlist. Go there, hit the schedule, hit the Viva La Mach show, and my playlist will be there. And you'll say, oh, let's see what you played. Thank you. Also want to remind you that the Westmoreland Cleanways and Recycling, which is located just outside of Pittsburgh and Greensburg, has received a grant to expand their facility to process any type and all types of foam mark number 6. That's clean plates, that's bowls, clamshells, egg cartons, trays, even that block protective packaging foam that you get when you buy like an electronic item or furniture, all of that. The grant was actually made possible through the Foam Recycling Coalition. You can bring the foam to their drop-off center at 355 Pleasant Unity Mutual Road out in Greensburg, or call them up at 724-879-4020. They have a website, westmorelandcleanways.org. Got about 13 minutes left in this program, which means I got two more songs to play. And I'm going to fill up most of those 13 minutes with these two songs, so just buckle up your seatbelt. Starting things off with Pittsburgh's own Deliberate Strangers and their version of Satan, Your Kingdom Must Come Down.
Satan, your kingdom must come down. Satan, your kingdom must come down. I heard the voice of Jesus say, Satan, your kingdom must come down. Kingdom down, pray till I tear your kingdom down. must come down.
Green, you know, there in your hands. After 3 days, you can see them, the veins and the bones. The bones are brown, really very dirty. It seemed like there are hundreds of them. After a week, we were able to read through our hands. Now, these books that they gave us, we put our hands over them. It was for fun, mostly. You couldn't really read anything because of all the bones and the veins. There wasn't anything to do. We couldn't really even read books, even when we took our hands off of them. Pages were thick, transparent, like membrane. There was something clear inside, not watery, it's more like oil. The letters were in the oil, floating. They didn't move very much. The oil must have been very heavy, except when you turn the pages, then you would lose everything. It was hard reading. You could see down 5 or 6 pages, and below that it would get dark. There wasn't much on each page. Everything you saw, everything was all run together. I thought it was supposed to be that way. The message. It would change a little bit every time you turn the page. One time I looked backwards to see what I'd read. It was something different. No, I don't think I was supposed to do that. No. No. I'm pretty sure. Okay. Now, they took me out by myself. I thought it was a library or a jail. I don't know. There were magazines, you know, like these here. I couldn't read them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I stared at them, and the harder I stared, it was just impossible. I couldn't move them. They washed me every day, all day almost. I'm sorry. It was several weeks. They kept me in the dark, and they brought me out. It was a room with the, what do you call them? Photo mirror, yeah. Mountains all the way around. And I saw all of it. Saw the linoleum under my feet, the roaches on the ceiling, right behind my head. And I looked around. It was funny. It was like I still had to look around to see. I was like that book, the book I was telling you about. And they put me back in the dark. And then they took me out. No. I don't know. They took me out. I thought I was going to a hospital or a school or something, but it was a boat, a ship. It traveled in the dark. No. It never stopped. It must have been going very fast. No. And we were always moving, but it was always night. The moon would come out. I couldn't recognize the stars, but the stars were out. Sometimes they would put me in a harness and roll me down the valley. We didn't seem to be traveling very fast, but we would have had to have been to be following the night around. For several weeks. One night, they stopped. They let the sun catch up with us. They put me in a black suit. It was very beautiful, yeah. Cliffs and islands. It was all pink, though the cliffs were there. Water was green, quite green. It was cold. I don't remember. But they told me. What? Yeah, that was it. There were insects there, like me. Clear. You could see everything. After a while, they told me I could go see Laurel. They took me to a house, but I didn't want to go in. No. No. I don't remember. Could you make me go back to sleep now?
Band was called Vibrating Egg, and that was their version of Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale. Album actually came out only on a 12-inch vinyl. back in 1988 on the Doggone record label. And I, the Moxer, I actually ordered it straight from the label. I ordered a couple albums and a t-shirt. Because believe it or not, Doggone Records was owned and operated by Jefferson Holt, who at that point was still the manager of REM. In fact, Vibrating Egg is Jefferson Holt. He just used a pseudonym for all the writing credits. He goes by Raul. There's also a writing credit in there for W.B. Carr, which was later to be revealed to be Mike Mills. And I'm sure the other members are somewhere on that release under their own pseudonyms. Before the Vibrating Egg, Pittsburgh's own Deliberate Strangers from the Mood Music for Snake Handlers release. Their sophomore release, their second album. And that gets us here, wrapping up yet another hour of what we call the Viva Lamont radio program. Always appreciate when you listen. Really all I have to say. I always appreciate when you listen. It's true. It's true. If you got a suggestion for a song, shoot me an email, wrctrequest@gmail.com. Rumor has it that the phone's going to work again and I'll be able to take live requests soon. We'll see. As always, keep your radio tuned here to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh for more great music.
You've tuned into Pandemonium, a public affairs program with WSUT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed on the show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs PA at WRCT.org. And now, Pandemonium. Hello, my name is Thomas Garrison. I'm a math major, and I'm here interviewing Wes Pegden, professor of mathematics at CMU today. And my first question is, how do you choose problems to work on?
Oh, yeah. So that's a good question. So, I mean, math problems, I think, yeah, we come to them in different ways. I mean, sometimes there's a problem that people have been thinking about for decades and, or it's been around for a long time that people have been curious about. And it's something that, you know, a lot of people want to solve. Other times you have a problem that you comes up in some sort of application, where it would help you solve something else. And so you start thinking about the problem that way. But a lot of times there's just, you know, problems were posed at some point and people got interested in them. And then they've been open problems for quite some time. And then it's this thing that people are interested in and understand.
Nice. Do you think about like math recreationally when you go home? Are you still thinking about math or did it shut off?
Oh yeah, I think, I think it's, you spend a lot of time thinking about math. Yeah. At unusual times when you're not really, yeah, you're kind of always, yeah, it's always sort of at least in the mind. Yeah. Some problem that you're working on, especially, yeah, if you're really close to something or you feel like, yeah, or there's one little thing that you're trying to fix about some proof, then yeah. Yeah, it's hard to think about anything else.
Makes sense. What is your approach when you start a new problem? How do you start, I guess?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that depends a lot on the problem. And also a lot on the person. Sometimes you're working in some field where where you've done a lot of work and you have a lot of tools that you're familiar with and a lot of techniques and maybe just by the nature of the problem, you have some ideas about how to get started. And there are similar problems that where you have some idea of how they were solved. And other times you're doing something completely new and it requires you to be much more exploratory and just, you know, sort of pursue a much more open-ended process of just sort of trying to get an understanding of what's going on without really knowing where that will lead you.
And how do you decide if you like need to like pull in other people or do you usually like to work alone or what?
That's an interesting question. I mean, sometimes, Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times people decide to work together on something because they sort of encounter the problem in, you know, together. You know, this, they're already discussing something, and then, oh, well, here's this thing that we've done. But other times, yeah, I mean, it can also happen that you're working on something and you think, well, this is something where I don't really know, you know, some technique or some, you know, background that would be relevant here. Maybe so-and-so can help me with this. So I think both of those things happen. Yeah, I think the social aspect of this is very real, and that, you know, sometimes just, you know, discussing things with people will lead to, you know, will lead to the idea of trying to work out some problem, and that those people will work on it together.
Got it. What's the problem you worked on that is easy to explain?
Easy to explain. One problem that's in this category of things that, you know, come from some application that people are interested in is something related to political districting, right? So there's this topic of gerrymandering, political districting. So this is when the people that draw, for example, the congressional districting of Pennsylvania might carefully draw the districting to maximize the electoral advantage they get from that districting, right? So, for example, if the Republican legislature of Pennsylvania was, drawing the congressional districting in 2011, they might have drawn it to try to ensure that they get as many Republican seats as possible in the U.S. Congress, in a delegation. Claims of gerrymandering are often litigated, right? So there are sometimes lawsuits asserting that, you know, one political party has carefully drawn a political districting to maximize their advantage in this way. Then when this happens, you know, there's a court case and evidence is presented, and judges have to decide whether or not this really happened, right? Did the political party really maximize their advantage? Did they really carefully draw these lines for some political goal? And so one thing that's funny about this is, right, I mean, if you think about this in the abstract, you're presented with one map, and the question is this map fair or not? And of course, usually to think about whether something is fair, you'd want to have some comparison. And so this is where math can come into play. So in particular, the natural question that arises mathematically from this problem is how one can generate truly random partitions of a geometric shape. So for example, that geometric shape could be a state. And by a geometric partition, we mean we want to divide the shape into a certain number of regions, each of which is a connected region, and each of which, in the case of a state districting, may have to have equal population in the state, and may have to satisfy some other geometric conditions. It's an example of a sampling problem, right? I have some complicated space, which is here the ways of dividing up a geometric shape into regions, and the problem is how can I generate a random sample from this space. So that's an example of something that we've done a lot of work on. And this is a good example of a problem that really came from an application, right? So there was this thing that people were discussing, which is how can we sort of get at the problem of evaluating these districtings? And that led to these natural questions about sampling.
Nice. And for problems like gerrymandering where it's applicable to the public, or problems that aren't applicable to the public, how do you try to make it like accessible to people?
Yes. Okay. In the case of the math that was related to these gerrymandering problems, it's especially important because, in particular, there's some court case, and a judge has to kind of understand what's going on because they have to, use this as part of their framework to decide what to think about the case. In the case of gerrymandering, for that reason, I mean, yeah, I spent a lot of time thinking about how to frame the procedure that we developed in simple terms, and even giving analogies and different ways of thinking about it, just to make it accessible. I mean, certainly, I don't think that I would never expect, you know, the proof of the theorem to be something that the court could understand, but I at least wanted the statement of the theorem to be something the court could understand, right? And I think that's something that we managed to do.
For less grounded in like application problem, do you still try to make it accessible, and how would you do that?
So I think a lot depends on the audience for the problem. I mean, sometimes you're working on a problem that is going to really be of most interest to, you know, people working in some specialized field. And then, I mean, that's your target audience, and you're really writing it for those people. And other times you're solving a problem that you hope will be more, that will have wider interest. And yeah, I think you always think about, you think about who the audience is, and then you try to make what you're doing understandable and relatable to that audience. And who that audience is, you know, can be very different from one math problem to another.
That makes a lot of sense. How or when did you know you wanted to do math?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, so I think I actually, as an undergraduate, so when I started as an undergrad, I wanted to do physics. And then I switched after a year to focusing on math. And I think, yeah, so the main reason is just for this is just that I think in high school in the United States, math is generally not taught very well in most schools. It's not really something we would call mathematics even, right? I mean, if you think about the highest level math class in many schools is some sort of, you know, AP calculus class, which is really a class about learning to do calculations. It's not really learning to do proofs or to think about things in rigorous ways that are intricate. And so I think until I got to be an undergraduate, I didn't really have a good sense of what university-level mathematics was. So I think it wasn't until I was an undergraduate that I really thought that I wanted to focus on math.
Makes sense. How has math changed the way you think?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, it's hard to know, right? I mean, I'm not sure how aware we all are our own thought, the trajectories of our own thought processes. But certainly, I think, you know, one way that we hope that math changes how we think is teaching us to be careful and cautious in our reasoning, and, you know, not make sort of unsupported leaps. There's one important lesson I think that math has to offer, which is, right, so if you're a math student at CMU, I think there should be at least one point in your class when you've seen your math professor be wrong about something.
Right.
Right. And I think this is an important lesson, right? So one thing I like about math is that there's no hiding from being wrong. And, right, a mistake is a mistake. And when something is not true, it's not true, and everybody can see it. And one thing that this should remind us of is that there is such a thing as really being wrong, and anybody can be wrong. So it suggests sort of a caution about appeals to authority. Right, so just because somebody's a professor or an expert or whatever, everybody can make mistakes.
Right,
and somehow as a student, you can see those mistakes. Right, and so I think it reminds us of the power of thought. Right, that you as a thinking student can see the professor making a mistake, and can see that they made a mistake, and you can be right about that.
Right,
and somehow, so this is something that's really appealing about mathematics is that it doesn't depend on. Hardly at all on appeals to the authority of the, you know, the leaders of the field, right?
Right.
That any person can who has experience can sort of work through and see whether something is actually true, whether a proof is correct, whether somebody's made a mistake, and yeah. So I think that there's some value in that lesson more generally. That in particular for all of us, we should remember that being wrong is a real thing,
right?
And sometimes it's us that are wrong.
Some of us more often than others, but
it's a real thing, and that, you know, just being an expert on something doesn't mean that you can't be wrong about it, and we should always remember this about ourselves.
Right. Yeah. Have you ever submitted a paper and had like a big mistake pointed out to you or anything of that kind?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. So I, after submitting a paper, I'm not sure about that. But certainly, I've written things down that I thought were right, and then later, you know, realized I had some problem with.
Yeah.
So thinking of good examples right now, but definitely this is something that happens, and it happens to everybody.
Right. What are you working on now? Is there a problem that you can explain in not too long?
Okay. Well, one thing I can do. Is I can explain sort of in more detail how this the mathematics of these gerrymandering problems works. So since I just touched on, so the basic so there the problem was how to sample, like how to generate good random samples from some from a set of geometric partitions of a shape. For example, that might be a state, and we want to divide that state into, let's say, 10 regions, all of which have roughly equal population, all of which are connected, and maybe we have some additional constraint that the shapes have to be nice in some way, like they can't, maybe the perimeter of the shapes can't be too large or something like that. And so how can I generate a random sample from this? So the basic tool here that gets used for a lot of problems like this is called a Markov chain. And a Markov chain is basically a random walk around any space. So for example, if you're, you know, in a city with a street grid, and you carry out a procedure where you, at every intersection, you roll a four-sided die to decide which direction to walk in. And you keep doing this over and over again so that you're taking a random walk around the city. That random walk that you're carrying out would be a Markov chain on the locations in the city, right? So over time, you would travel around the city. And if you did this for long enough, you would eventually be at an essentially random point of the city. And so the crucial point, the crucial property of a Markov chain, the reason why, so what the name means in mathematics, is that every step, what you decide to do next depends only on where you are and not where you came from, right? So for example, every time you get to an intersection, you roll a die and you can go in any direction, and it doesn't depend on sort of, you know, what you did 10 steps ago. Okay, and in any case, so a random walk like this can be done not just on a space like city streets, but on any space that you can define. And so what you can do for a problem like the districting problem is define a space which is the set of all possible partitions of the state into 10 regions of roughly equal population, which are nice in shape. So that's a huge space of possibilities, right? So to keep it from being infinite, let's imagine that the districts, so the partition classes, are built out of discrete building blocks. So maybe each one is a collection of voting precincts or something like that.
Right.
So that essentially we're partitioning a planar graph. And how do we define a random walk around this space? Well, you can imagine moving from one districting to another by making a small change to it. Like maybe I find a voting precinct on the boundary of two districts, and I change which of those two districts it belongs to. And if I do that, then I've taken one step. I move from one choice of how to partition the state to another. And if I made that choice randomly, so if I had randomly chosen which precinct to change the membership of, then I would have taken a random step in this space.
Right.
And then by making a sequence of steps like this over and over again, I'm walking through this space of possible districts of the state, just like you're walking around the city if you're rolling this die at every intersection. And also just like that, if I do this for long enough, I'll reach what's called a stationary, I'll become close to what's called a stationary distribution, where my location is random, and approximately it's random with a specific distribution that I can calculate.
Right.
And so it lets me get a handle on how to generate these random samples talking about. But there are all sorts of theoretical challenges with using Markov chains in a context like this. So, you know, one thing that I alluded to just now is that if I run this chain for long enough, for example, if I walk around the city for long enough, I'm at an essentially random location. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's true, but what we don't know in many cases is how long you have to do the walk for. So for the city, if I really have something like a square grid, on an example like this, you can prove something about what's called the mixing time, which is how long you have to run the walk before you're essentially random. But for the case of a districting problem, we don't know the mixing time rigorously. And so we don't know how long you have to run. We know that in principle, if I ran it for long enough, I would be in an approximately random state. But we don't actually know exactly how long that would take. And in particular, it could take exponentially long in the size of the state. What we do for this problem is we develop statistical techniques that allow us to make rigorous statements about whether districtings are outliers without answering this question of how long you would have to run to mix.
Yeah.
But this question of the mixing time of the chain is itself very interesting. And so this is one thing that we're thinking about now, is what we can say about generating random samples